Chapter 6. Holotropic Breathwork, A New Approach to Psychotherapy and Self-Exploration, Part 1. Holotropic breathwork is an experiential method of self-exploration and psychotherapy that my late wife Christina and I developed in the mid-1970s at the Esalen Institute in Big Sur, California. This approach induces deep holotropic states of consciousness through a combination of very simple means: accelerated breathing, evocative music, and a bodywork technique that helps to release residual bioenergetic and emotional blocks. The sessions are usually conducted in groups. Participants work in pairs and alternate in the roles of breathers and sitters. The process is supervised by trained facilitators who assist participants whenever special intervention is necessary. Following the breathing sessions, participants express their experiences by painting mandalas and sharing accounts of their inner journeys in small groups. Follow-up interviews and various complementary methods are used, if necessary, to facilitate the completion and integration of the breathwork experience. In both theory and practice, holotropic breathwork combines and integrates various elements from modern consciousness research, depth psychology, transpersonal psychology, Eastern spiritual philosophies, and native healing practices. It differs significantly from traditional forms of psychotherapy, such as psychoanalysis and various other schools of depth psychology, which primarily use verbal means. It shares certain common characteristics with the experiential therapies of humanistic psychology, such as Gestalt practice and the Neo-Reichian approaches, which emphasize direct emotional expression and work with the body. However, the unique feature of holotropic breathwork is that it utilizes the therapeutic potential of holotropic states of consciousness. Ancient and native cultures used holotropic states for centuries or even millennia in their ritual, spiritual, and healing practices. The extraordinary healing power of these states was confirmed by modern consciousness research conducted in the second half of the 20th century. This research has also shown that the phenomena occurring during these states represent a critical challenge for the current conceptual frameworks used by academic psychiatry and psychology, as well as for their basic metaphysical assumptions. The work with holotropic breathwork requires a new understanding of consciousness and of the human psyche, both healthy and diseased. The basic principles of this new psychology were discussed in the second chapter of this encyclopedia, as well as my other writings. Essential components of holotropic breathwork. Holotropic breathwork combines faster breathing, evocative music, and releasing bodywork to induce intense holotropic states of consciousness, which have a remarkable healing and transformative power. This method provides access to biographical, perinatal, and transpersonal domains of the unconscious, and thus to deep psychospiritual roots of emotional and psychosomatic disorders. It also makes it possible to utilize the mechanisms of healing and personality transformation that operate on these levels of the psyche. The process of self-exploration and therapy in holotropic breathwork is spontaneous and autonomous. It is governed by client's own inner healing intelligence, rather than by following the instructions and guidelines of a particular school of psychotherapy. Most of the recent revolutionary discoveries concerning consciousness and the human psyche on which holotropic breathwork is based are only new for modern psychiatry and psychology. They have a long history as integral parts of the ritual and spiritual life of many ancient and native cultures, as well as their healing practices. The basic principles of holotropic breathwork represent rediscovery validation, and the modern reformulation of ancient wisdom and procedures, some of which can be traced back to the dawn of human history. The same is also true for the principal constituents used in the practice of holotropic breathwork: breathing, instrumental music and chanting, bodywork, and mandala drawing or other forms of artistic expression. They have been used for centuries or even millennia in the healing ceremonies and ritual practices of all pre-industrial human groups. The healing power of breath. In ancient and pre-industrial societies, the breath has played a very important role in cosmology, mythology, and philosophy, as well as in ritual and spiritual practices. Various breathing techniques have been used since time immemorial for religious and healing purposes. Since the earliest times, virtually every major psycho-spiritual system seeking to comprehend human nature has viewed breath as a crucial link between nature, the human body, the psyche, and the spirit. In ancient Indian literature, the term prana meant not only physical breath and air, but also the sacred essence of life. Similarly, in traditional Chinese medicine, the word qi refers to the cosmic essence and the energy of life, as well as to the air we breathe into our lungs. In Japan, the corresponding word is ki. Ki plays an extremely important role in Japanese spiritual practices and martial arts. In ancient Greece, the word pneuma meant air or breath, as well as spirit, or the essence of life. The Greeks also saw breath as being closely related to the psyche. The term phren was used both for the diaphragm, the largest muscle involved in breathing, and the mind, as we see in the term schizophrenia, which literally means split mind. In the old Hebrew tradition, the same word ruach denoted both breath and creative spirit, which were seen as identical. The following quote from Genesis shows the close relationship between God, breath, and life. Then the Lord God formed a man, Hebrew Adam, from the dust of the ground, and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and the man became a living being. In Latin, the same name was used for breath and spirit, spiritus. Similarly, in Slavic languages, spirit and breath have the same linguistic root. In native Hawaiian tradition and medicine, Kanaka Moli Lapa'au, the word ha means the divine spirit, wind, air, and breath. It is contained in the popular Hawaiian aloha, an expression that is used in many different contexts. It is usually translated as presence, alo, of the divine breath, ha. Its opposite, haoli, meaning without breath or without life, is a term that native Hawaiians have applied to white-skinned foreigners since the arrival of the infamous British sea captain James Cook in 1778. The kahunas, keepers of secret knowledge, have used breathing exercises to generate spiritual energy, mana. It has been known for centuries that it is possible to influence consciousness through techniques that involve breathing. The procedures that have been used for this purpose by various ancient and pre-industrial cultures cover a wide range, from drastic interference with breathing to subtle and sophisticated exercises of various spiritual traditions. The original form of baptism practiced by the Essenes, for example, involved forced submersion of the initiate underwater for an extended period of time. This resulted in a powerful experience of death and rebirth. In some other groups, the neophytes were half-choked by smoke, strangulation, or compression of the carotid arteries. Profound changes of consciousness can be induced by both extremes in the breathing rate, hyperventilation, and prolonged withholding of breath, as well as by using these two extremes in an alternating fashion. Very sophisticated and advanced methods of this kind can be found in the ancient Indian science of breath, pranayama. William Walker Atkinson, an American writer who was influential during the turn of the century spiritual philosophical movement in the 1890s to 1900s, wrote a comprehensive treatise on the Hindu science of breath under the pseudonym Yogi Ramacharaka. Specific techniques involving intense breathing or withholding of breath are also part of various exercises in Kundalini Yoga, Siddha Yoga, the Tibetan Vajrayana, Sufi practice, Burmese Buddhist and Taoist meditation, among many other spiritual systems. Indirectly, the depth and rhythm of breathing can be profoundly influenced by ritual artistic performances, such as the Balinese monkey chant or ketchak, the Inuit Eskimo throat music, the Tibetan and Mongolian multivocal chanting, and the singing of kirtans, bhajans, or Sufi chants. More subtle techniques, which emphasize special awareness in relation to breathing rather than changes of the respiratory dynamics, have a prominent place in Buddhism. Anapanasati is a basic form of meditation taught by the Buddha. It literally means mindfulness of breathing, from the Pali anapana, meaning inhalation and exhalation, and sati, meaning mindfulness. Buddha's teaching of anapana was based on his experience using it as a means of achieving his own enlightenment. He emphasized the importance of being mindful not only of one's breath, but using the breath to become aware of one's entire body and of all of one's experience. According to the Anapanasati Sutra, practicing this form of meditation leads to the removal of all defilements, kilesa. The Buddha taught that systematic practices of Anapanasati would lead to the final release, nirvana or nibbana. Anapanasati is practiced in connection with vipassana, insight meditation, and Zen meditation, shikantaza, which means just sitting. The essence of Anapanasati as the core meditation practice in Buddhism, especially the Theravada school, is to be a passive observer of the natural involuntary breathing process. This is in sharp contrast with the yogic pranayama practices, which employ breathing techniques that aim for rigorous control of the breath. Anapanasati is not, however, the only Buddhist form of breathing meditation. In the Buddhist spiritual practices used in Tibet, Mongolia, and Japan, breath control plays an important role. The cultivation of special attention to breathing also represents an essential part of certain Taoist and Christian practices. In the development of materialistic science, breathing lost its sacred meaning and was stripped of its connection to the psyche and spirit. Western medicine reduced it to an important physiological function. The physical and psychological manifestations that accompany various respiratory maneuvers have all been pathologized. The psychosomatic response to faster breathing, the so-called hyperventilation syndrome, is considered a pathological condition rather than what it really is, a process that has an enormous healing potential. When hyperventilation occurs spontaneously, it is routinely suppressed by the administration of tranquilizers, injections of intravenous calcium, and the application of a paper bag over the face to increase the concentration of carbon dioxide and combat the alkalosis caused by faster breathing. In the second half of the 20th century, Western therapists rediscovered the healing potential of breath and developed techniques that utilize it. We have experimented with various approaches involving breathing in the context of our month-long seminars at the Esalen Institute in Big Sur, California. These included both breathing exercises from ancient spiritual traditions under the guidance of Indian and Tibetan teachers, as well as techniques developed by Western therapists. Each of these approaches has a specific emphasis and uses breath in a different way. In our own search for an effective method, we tried to simplify this process as much as possible. We came to the conclusion that it is sufficient to breathe faster and more effectively than usual, with full concentration on the inner process. Instead of emphasizing a specific technique of breathing, we follow the general strategy of holotropic work to trust the intrinsic wisdom of the body and follow the inner clues. In holotropic breathwork, we encourage people to begin the session with faster and somewhat deeper breathing, tying inhalation and exhalation into a continuous circle of breath. Once in the process, they find their own rhythm and way of breathing. We have been able to repeatedly confirm Wilhelm Reich's observation that psychological resistances and defenses are associated with restricted breathing. Respiration is an autonomous function, but it can also be influenced by volition. The deliberate increase of breathing typically loosens psychological defenses and leads to a release and emergence of unconscious and superconscious material. Unless one has witnessed or experienced this process personally, it is difficult to believe, on theoretical grounds alone, in the power and efficacy of this technique. The therapeutic potential of music. In holotropic breathwork, the consciousness-expanding effect of breath is combined with evocative music. Like breathing, music and other forms of sound technology have been used for millennia as powerful tools in ritual and spiritual practice. Monotonous drumming, rattling, chanting, instrumental music, and other forms of sound-producing techniques have always been some of the principal tools of shamans in different parts of the world. Many pre-industrial cultures have quite independently developed drumming rhythms that have remarkable effects on the electric activity of the brain in laboratory experiments. The archives of cultural anthropologists contain countless examples of powerful trance-inducing methods that combine instrumental music, chanting, and dancing. In many cultures, sound technology has been used specifically for healing purposes in the context of intricate ceremonies. The Navajo healing rituals conducted by trained singers have astounding complexity that has been compared to the scores of Wagnerian operas. The trance dance and extended drumming of the Kung Bushmen of the African Kalahari Desert have enormous healing power, as has been documented in many anthropological studies and movies. The healing potential of the syncretistic religious rituals of the Caribbean islands and South America, such as the Cuban Santeria or Brazilian Umbanda, is recognized by many professionals in these countries who have traditional Western medical training. Remarkable instances of emotional and psychosomatic healing occur in the meetings of Christian groups using music, singing, and dance, such as the Snake Handlers, Holy Ghost People, and the Revivalists, or members of the Pentecostal Church. Some spiritual traditions have developed sound technologies that do not just induce a general trance state, but have a specific effect on consciousness and the human psyche and body. The Indian teachings postulate a specific connection between certain acoustic frequencies and the individual chakras or subtle energy centers of the human body. With systematic use of this knowledge, it is possible to influence the state of consciousness in a predictable and desirable way. The ancient Indian tradition called Nada Yoga, or the way to union through sound, is known to maintain, improve, and restore emotional, psychosomatic, and physical health and well-being. Extraordinary vocal performances used for ritual, spiritual, and healing purposes include the multivocal chanting of the Tibetan Gyotso monks, as well as the Mongolian and Tuva shamans, the Hindu bhajans and kirtans, the Santo Daime chants, Ikaros, used in ayahuasca ceremonies, the throat music of the Inuit Eskimo people, and the sacred chants, dikirs, of various Sufi orders. These are just a few examples of the extensive use of instrumental music and chanting for healing, ritual, and spiritual purposes. We used music systematically in the program of psychedelic therapy at the Maryland Psychiatric Research Center in Baltimore, Maryland, and have learned much about its extraordinary potential for psychotherapy. Carefully selected music seems to be of particular value in holotropic states of consciousness, where it has several important functions. It mobilizes emotions associated with repressed memories, brings them to the surface, and facilitates their expression. It helps to open the door into the unconscious, intensifies and deepens the therapeutic process, and provides a meaningful context for the experience. The continuous flow of music creates a carrier wave that helps the subject move through difficult experiences and impasses, overcome psychological defenses, surrender, and let go. In holotropic breathwork sessions, which are usually conducted in groups, music has an additional function. It masks the noises made by the participants and weaves them into a dynamic aesthetic gestalt. In order to use music as a catalyst for deep self-exploration and experiential work, it is necessary to learn a new way of listening and relating to music in a manner that is alien to our culture. In the West, we frequently employ music as an acoustic background that has little emotional relevance. Typical examples would be the use of popular music at cocktail parties or piped music, muzak, in shopping areas and workspaces. A different approach used by sophisticated audiences is the disciplined and attentive listening to music in theaters and concert halls. The dynamic and elemental way that music is used in rock concerts comes closer to the use of music in holotropic breathwork. However, the attention of participants in such events is usually extroverted, and the experience lacks an element that is essential in holotropic therapy or self-exploration: sustained, focused introspection. In holotropic therapy, it is essential to surrender completely to the flow of music, let it resonate in one's entire body, and to respond to it in a spontaneous and elemental fashion. This includes manifestations that would be unthinkable in a concert hall, where crying or even coughing is seen as a disturbance and causes annoyance and embarrassment. In holotropic work, one should give full expression to whatever the music is bringing out, whether it is loud screaming or laughing, baby talk, animal noises, shamanic chanting, or talking in tongues. It is also important not to control any physical impulses, such as bizarre grimacing, sensual movements of the pelvis, violent shaking, or intense contortions of the entire body. Naturally, there are exceptions to this rule: destructive behavior directed toward oneself, others, and the physical environment is not permissible. We also encourage participants to suspend any intellectual activity, such as trying to guess the composer or the culture from which the music comes. Other ways of avoiding the emotional impact of the music involve engaging one's professional expertise, judging the performance of the orchestra, guessing which instruments are playing, and criticizing the technical quality of the recording or of the music equipment in the room. When we avoid these pitfalls, music can become a very powerful tool for inducing and supporting holotropic states of consciousness. For this purpose, the music has to be of superior technical quality and be played at a sufficient volume to drive the experience. The combination of music with faster breathing has a remarkable mind-manifesting and consciousness-expanding power. As far as the specific choice of music is concerned, I will only mention the general principles and give a few suggestions based on our experience. After a certain time, each therapist or therapeutic team develops a list of their favorite pieces for various stages of the sessions. The basic rule is to respond sensitively to the phase, intensity, and content of the participant's experience rather than trying to program it. This is in congruence with the general philosophy of holotropic therapy, particularly the deep respect for the wisdom of the self-healing intelligence, for the collective unconscious, and for the autonomy and spontaneity of the healing process. In general, it is important to use music that is intense, evocative, and conducive to a positive experience. We try to avoid selections that are jarring, dissonant, and anxiety-provoking. Preference should be given to music of high artistic quality that is not well known and has little concrete content. One should avoid playing songs and other vocal pieces in languages known to the participants, which would convey a specific message or suggest a specific theme. When vocal compositions are used, they should be in foreign languages so that the human voice is perceived as just another musical instrument. For the same reason, it is preferable to avoid pieces which evoke specific intellectual associations and tend to program the content of the session, such as Richard Wagner's or Mendelssohn Bartholdy's wedding marches and overtures to Bizet's Carmen or Verdi's Aida. The session typically begins with activating music that is dynamic, flowing, and emotionally uplifting and reassuring. As the session continues, the music gradually increases in intensity and moves to powerful rhythmic pieces, preferably drawn from ritual and spiritual traditions of various native cultures. Although many of these performances can be aesthetically pleasing, the main purpose for the people that develop them is not entertainment, but the induction of holotropic experiences. An example here could be the dance of the whirling dervishes, accompanied by beautiful music and chants. It is not designed to be admired as a superb ballet performance, but to take people to the experience of God. About an hour and a half into the session of holotropic breathwork, when the experience typically culminates, we introduce what we call breakthrough music. The selections used at this time range from sacred music, masses, oratoria, requiems, and other strong orchestral pieces, to excerpts from dramatic movie soundtracks. In the second half of the session, the intensity of the music gradually decreases, and we bring in loving and emotionally moving pieces, heart music. Finally, in the termination period of the session, the music has a soothing, flowing, timeless, and meditative quality. Most practitioners of holotropic breathwork collect musical recordings and tend to create their own favorite sequences for the five consecutive phases of the session. 1. Opening music. 2. Trance-inducing music. 3. Breakthrough music. 4. Heart music. And 5. Meditative music. Some of them use music programs that are pre-recorded for the entire session. This allows the facilitators to be more available for the group, but it makes it impossible to adjust the selection of the music to the energy of the group. On special occasions, we might have the luxury of using live music. This is the common practice in rituals of native cultures. It makes it possible for the musicians and the participants to interact with each other and creatively feed off each other's energy. The use of releasing bodywork. The physical and emotional response to holotropic breathwork varies considerably from one person to another, and also from session to session. Most commonly, faster breathing brings, at first, more or less dramatic psychosomatic manifestations. The textbooks on respiratory physiology refer to this response to accelerated breathing as the hyperventilation syndrome. They describe it as a stereotypical pattern of physiological responses that consists primarily of tensions in the hands and feet, tetany, or carpopedal spasms. We have conducted more than 40,000 holotropic breathwork sessions and have found the current medical understanding of the effects of faster breathing to be incorrect. There are many individuals for whom fast breathing carried over a period of several hours does not lead to a classical hyperventilation syndrome, but to progressive relaxation, intense sexual feelings, or even mystical experiences. Others develop tensions in various parts of the body, but do not show signs of the carpopedal spasms. Moreover, in those who develop tensions, continued faster breathing does not lead to progressive increase of the tensions, but tends to be self-limited. It typically reaches a climactic culmination, followed by profound relaxation. The pattern of this sequence has a certain resemblance to a sexual orgasm. In repeated holotropic sessions, this process of increasing tensions and subsequent relaxation tends to move from one part of the body to another in a way that varies from person to person. The overall amount of muscular tensions and of intense emotions tends to decrease with the number of sessions. What happens in this process is that faster breathing, extended for a long period of time, changes the person's chemistry so that blocked physical and emotional energies, which are associated with various traumatic memories, are released and become available for peripheral discharge and processing. This makes it possible for the previously repressed content of these memories to emerge into consciousness and be integrated. It is a healing process that should be encouraged and supported, and not a pathological process that needs to be suppressed, as is common in medical practice. Physical manifestations that develop during the breathing in various areas of the body are not simple physiological reactions. They show a complex psychosomatic structure and usually have specific psychological meaning for the individuals involved. Sometimes they represent an intensified version of tensions and pains from everyday life, such as chronic symptoms that appear at times of emotional or physical stress, fatigue, weakening from an illness, or the effects of using alcohol or marijuana. Other times, they can be recognized as the reactivation of old latent symptoms that the individual suffered from in infancy, childhood, puberty, or some other time in life. The tensions we carry in our body can be released in two different ways. The first of them involves abreaction and catharsis, the discharge of pent-up physical energies through tremors, twitches, intense body movements, coughing, and vomiting. Both abreaction and catharsis also typically include the release of blocked emotions through crying, screaming, and other types of vocal expression. We talk about abreaction when the emotional and physical discharges are connected with the emergence of a specific traumatic memory. Aristotle's term, catharsis, is used to describe a general cleansing discharge of emotions and physical energies without a specifiable source and content. These are mechanisms that have been well known in traditional psychiatry since Sigmund Freud and Joseph Breuer published their studies on hysteria. Various abreactive techniques have been used in traditional psychiatry for the treatment of traumatic emotional neuroses. Abreaction also represents an integral part of the new experiential psychotherapies, such as the Neo-Reichian work, Gestalt practice, and primal therapy. The second mechanism that can mediate the release of pent-up physical and emotional tensions plays an important role in holotropic breathwork, rebirthing, and other forms of therapy using breathing techniques. It represents a new development in psychiatry and psychotherapy and can at times be even more effective than abreaction. Deep tensions surface in the form of unrelenting muscular contractions of various duration, tetany. By sustaining these muscular tensions for extended periods of time, the body consumes enormous amounts of previously pent-up energy and simplifies its functioning by disposing of them. The deep relaxation that typically follows the temporary intensification of old tensions or the appearance of previously latent ones bears witness to the healing nature of this process. These mechanisms have their parallels in sport physiology, where it is well known that it is possible to do work and train the muscles in two different ways, through isotonic and isometric exercises. As the names suggest, during isotonic exercises, the tension of the muscles remains constant while their length oscillates. During isometric exercises, the tension of the muscles changes, but their length remains the same the whole time. A good example of isotonic activity is boxing, while weightlifting or bench pressing are distinctly isometric exercises. Both of these mechanisms are extremely effective in releasing and resolving deep-seated chronic muscular tension. In spite of their superficial differences, they have much in common, and in holotropic breathwork, they complement each other very effectively. In many instances, the difficult memories, emotions, and physical sensations that emerge from the unconscious during holotropic breathwork sessions are spontaneously resolved, and the breathers end up in a deeply relaxed meditative state. In this case, no external interventions are necessary, and the breathers remain in this state until they return to the ordinary state of consciousness. If the breathing in and of itself does not lead to a good completion, and there are residual tensions or unresolved emotions, facilitators should offer participants a specific form of bodywork, which helps them to reach a better closure for the session. The general strategy of this work is to ask the breather to focus his or her attention on the area where there is unreleased tension, and to do whatever is necessary to intensify the existing physical sensations. The facilitators then help to intensify these feelings even further by appropriate external intervention. While the attention of the breather is focused on the energetically charged problem area, he or she is encouraged to find a spontaneous reaction to this situation. This response should not reflect a conscious choice of the breather, but be fully determined by the unconscious process. It often takes an entirely unexpected and surprising form. Animal-like vocalizations, talking in tongues, or an unknown foreign language. A shamanic chant from a particular culture, gibberish, or baby talk. Equally frequent are completely unexpected physical reactions, such as violent tremors, jolts, coughing, and vomiting, as well as various characteristic animal movements, climbing, flying, digging, crawling, slithering, and others. It is essential that the facilitators encourage and support what is spontaneously emerging, rather than apply some technique offered by a particular school of therapy. This work should be continued until the facilitator and the breather reach an agreement that the session has been adequately concluded. The breather should end the session in a comfortable and relaxed state. We have repeatedly heard from breathers at this stage, "I have never been this relaxed in my whole life," or, "I feel for the first time in my life that I am really in my body." After getting clearance from the facilitators, the breathers who have completed the session move to the art room to draw their mandalas.